Well, this morning we are in our second of a multi-part series simply called Foundations. And if you were not here last week, I would highly encourage you to go online and listen to the message from last week, because each week kind of everything is going to be foundationally built upon each other. And so we're going to be kind of assuming things on each successive week that we've talked about the week before. So some of it doesn't make sense. You can kind of go back and check that out. But if you weren't here last week, I'll kind of give you the Cliff Notes version. And some of you are going, man, if I'd know I could do that, I'd have just skipped last week and come now. But we talked about the idea, and we started out with the statement that foundations are incredibly important. Whether it's a house, a building, any kind of a structure, or even the structure of our life, that foundations are incredibly important. And I introduced the idea that I believe that the foundation of our lives is that what we have called a worldview. And a worldview, just again as a reminder, is just simply the way we look at the world. It's the framework, the filter by which we take everything in the world and then make sense of it and figure out where we fit in. It's kind of the assumptions that we have, the basic presuppositions about how the world works and how we fit in it. It helps us to answer questions like, where do we come from? What's wrong with the world? Is the world getting better or getting worse? And why? Is there anything we can do about it? Can we fix things? Where's my purpose? What's the meaning of life? And over these next several weeks, I'm going to be trying to do my best to give the biblical answer to those questions. And because I believe as a Christian, we need to be founded. Our foundation needs to be in the Word of God. That every part of our thinking needs to be rooted in the Word of God. So all of our thinking about politics and about theology and about family life and about our work life and about our finances, everything, our thinking needs to be based on the Bible. So now, that's the way I'm going to approach the subject. But even if you don't believe everything I say, you don't have to. These questions are so important, and the implications to the answers of these questions are so important that you owe it to yourself to at least, if you don't believe what I say, at least wrestle them to the ground for yourself so that at least you are satisfied with the answers to these questions. Last week we began with two simple verses from the Psalms, one of which said, "The fool says in his heart, there is no God," and the other said that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And those two verses kind of led us to our bottom line last week, was that our worldview will be determined by our view of God. What we believe about God will determine our worldview. It all comes down to, and all the questions that we're going to talk about come down to, authority. Who is the authority? Is it God? Is it me? Is it someone else? And so we looked last week at the idea that there were at least two different ways to look at everything. Maybe you've noticed that. Two different people, maybe you live with that person, can look at the same set of events, come up with two totally different explanations, two totally different understandings of what actually happened. And we looked at several verses in the Bible where the Apostle Paul explained why that was. Because he said that if we deny God in our heart, something happens in our mind. He said that our brain, our mind becomes clouded, our thoughts become confused, and we can't see things straight anymore. And so, almost by definition, if we don't have God at the center of our life, we will look at the world differently than those people who do. Now, all that is not to say that Christian people are smart and non-Christian people are dumb. It's simply to say that if you start with the wrong worldview, if you start with the wrong assumptions and presuppositions about the foundational things of life, then it's very likely that you're going to come up with the wrong conclusions at the end of the day. So, before we can go any further, though, to answer some of those questions, where did we come from and what's the purpose of life? You know, some of you are kind of anxious, I know, to hear, you know, the succinct answer to those questions. Before we can go to that, there's another foundational issue that we have to talk about today, and that is this idea of the nature of truth. Capital T, truth. That is the idea that there are moral truths that are true for everyone, all the time, everywhere, and that everyone is accountable to. It's kind of an idea that's come on disfavor recently. Have you noticed that? Now, really, this whole attack on the idea of truth has been around since the beginning of time. The Bible tells us that in the Garden of Eden, Satan tempted Adam and Eve with these words. Did God really say? Did God really say? And the very first sin, the very first temptation, was when Satan tempted people to disbelieve the truth of what God had to say. This issue of truth was around when Jesus walked the earth. in his discussion with Pontius Pilate, as Pilate was questioning him before Jesus was sentenced to be crucified, Pontius Pilate asked him questions about who he was and what he was there for. It's interesting, his response. Jesus said in John chapter 18, verse 37 and 38, he said, "The reason I was born and came into the world..." Wouldn't that be nice to know what Jesus said, the reason he was born for? And he said this a couple things at times, that he had a couple of purpose, but this is one purpose statement of Jesus' life. "The reason I was born and came into the world was to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." To which Pilate replied, "What is truth?" Now, Pilate was a politician, and much like today, the truth was what the majority of the people said it was, right? If enough people believed it, that was truth. And so maybe Pilate's answer was more, not really a question, but more just a disgusted challenge, like, truth? What's truth? People are asking the same question, and maybe the same tone today. In our cultural context today, I mean, it's prevalent that way. I mean, we live in a plural society, right? Not everybody believes the same thing. That's the facts. But recently, that idea of a plural society has developed into an ideology of pluralism, so that we're told, how could anyone be so brash or so bold or so intolerant or arrogant to suggest that they have the truth about something? No, we have to be inclusive and tolerant and understanding of people that believe differently than we do. Our kids are taught multiculturalism in school, this whole idea that every culture is the same and that really all viewpoints are valid and we can't judge other cultures or other people by our own standards. And that kind of thinking, that what's true for you might not be true for me, has even filtered its way into the church. Recent studies show that 2/3 of Christian adults, people who call themselves a Christian, say they don't believe in an absolute standard of right and wrong, that moral truth is always relative to the person and the place and the event at the time. Well, that's not very good. But it gets worse than that. Only 9% of Christian teenagers say that there's such a thing as moral truth that is true for everybody, everywhere, all the time. It's my belief that we are at a crisis of truth more than any other time in the history of the world. Everywhere we go, people are deciding for themselves what is true. It's why, if you ever notice this, that why Christian people who call themselves Christians come up with different ideas on all kinds of things, why we can't agree on even things like abortion or homosexuality or really any other issue. Have you noticed that? That there are Christians, people who call themselves Christians, on all sides of every issue. You can't think of an issue that we can't get people on both sides of. And why is that? Because everybody has decided what is true for themselves. And that's one of the results. Everywhere we go, people are deciding for themselves what's true. We're like the little Johnny, whose teacher said, "Johnny, how do you spell crocodile?" He proudly stood up and said, "K-R-O-K-A-D-I-A-L," and sat back down. The teacher said, "That's not how crocodile spelled." He said, "Teacher, you asked me how I spelled it, and that's how I spell it." Right? We all have truth of our own. We like to determine our own truth. Now, I believe that even though most people, and maybe many of you this morning, would find yourself in that category, if the statistics are true, 2/3 of you or 9/10 of you would agree that there's no such thing as an absolute moral standard that everyone everywhere is accountable to. Even though people might say that, or even though you came in thinking you believe that, I don't believe it's true. I don't believe you believe that. In fact, I don't believe that anybody believes there isn't at least some standard of right and wrong, there's true for everybody all the time. For example, I mean, is there anybody that really believes that it would be okay for me to pour this very hot water on my friend Joy here, who's sitting in the front row? Nobody believes that, right? Is there anybody that believes it's empty? Is there anybody who really believes that the Boy Scout who comes across the old lady on the side of the street should push her into traffic rather than to help her across the road? I mean, does anybody believe that? Nobody believes that. Does anybody believe that lying and cheating and stealing are actually good things? Nobody believes that. Even if people do them, they don't like it when people do it to them. Have you noticed that? Like the guy who got his paycheck one week and noticed it was $100 more than it should have been. Well, he just thought it was a nice windfall, and he didn't call it to anybody's attention. He went out to dinner and enjoyed himself. Well, the next week, the payroll master figured out the mistake and shorted him by $100 just to make up for the difference. And of course, he brought that to their attention and said, look, my paycheck is short. And she said, yeah, but last week it was too much and you didn't say anything then. He said, well, I can let some things go, but two mistakes in a row, I got to draw the line somewhere. Right? Nobody believes that it's all right to lie and cheat and steal. That's why when confronted with our own questionable behavior, we don't say that lying and cheating and stealing is okay. What we try to do is try to convince the other person that what we did wasn't actually lying, cheating, or stealing, right? Because everybody understands that those are not right. I mean, you're trying to argue with somebody, and you, more than just saying that their behavior offended you or that you didn't like it, you appeal to some standard of behavior that you think they should know about, right? Isn't that the kind of the gist of an argument? Or take it even to a deeper level. Again, I don't think anybody says there is no such thing as a standard of right and wrong. Think about what happened on 9/11. I'll go back a few years before that, the events of World War II and Nazi Germany and the Holocaust and all that. Or even just the events of the last week or two, as we see, you know, terrorist killings really all around the world, thousands in different countries that don't get on the news, and if you know the few in Paris that did. As soon as you say that one set of ideas, as soon as you say that the Nazis were wrong, as soon as you say that the people on 9/11 who did that were wrong, as soon as you do that, you're judging one set of ideas as being not as good as another set of ideas. And when you do that, you're comparing them both to some unspoken standard. So I, again, submit to you that there is nobody that actually believes there is no such thing as absolute truth. The question is not if there's a standard of right and wrong. The question is whose standard of right and wrong will we go with? So when anybody comes up to you and says, there is no such thing as absolute truth, you can respond to them by saying, are you absolutely sure? Because you see, you can't say it without, it's impossible. If some of you can understand that, but if there is no absolute truth, you can't make the statement, there is no absolute truth. And the same thing is true. If there is no God, someone that says there is no God, saying they themselves are God. They're saying they know everything there is to know, and they can tell you that there is no God. And if somebody knows everything there is to know, guess what they are? They're God. Okay? No one believes that there is no such thing as a standard. The question isn't if there's a standard of right and wrong. The question is, whose standard will we go by? And again, the key issue, as it was last week and as it will be for the rest of our series, the key issue is authority. Who is in authority? And as I look at it, I can only come up with like three even possibilities, all right, for people to come up with their, where to come up with the standard of right and wrong. Either it's themselves, what seems right to me, okay, and a lot of people go through life that way, that they live by the standard that's right, that seems right to them, and they say it's okay for you to do the same thing. The issue is when your standard and my behavior bump up against each other. Right? That's when there's issues. And so then some people say, well, it's not me. I'm not the one that makes the rules. It's some expert out there. Maybe it's science. Maybe it's the smart guy in the university. Maybe it's the guy in the news or the guy in the White House or whatever. They make the rules. And so we're just going by what they say. And then the only other option I can come up with is if it's not me or some other person, is God. And so really that just boils it down to two. The only possibility for who the authority is going to be, who makes the rules, it's either man or God. And so the fundamental debate is really about who is the most trustworthy source about anything. Is it God or is it man, whether it's me or somebody else? It's all about authority. And as we said last week, what you believe about God will determine your worldview. It will determine how you answer all those questions. So if we can agree, and I'm assuming that you are agreeing with me, that everybody has some standard of right and wrong. Everybody has some standard of truth. Let's try to talk just a minute about truth. So we're going to look, in the time we have left, at five truths about truths. No, five truths about truth. Five things that are true about truth. The first thing that we're going to look at is kind of a definition, and that is that truth is that which corresponds with reality. Truth is what corresponds with reality. Truth is what really is. It's how things actually are, not how we wish they were or we hope they would be or what we think they might be. It's what they actually are. So, for example, the truth of the statement, I have a brown desk in my office, is only true if, in fact, I have a brown desk in my office. Now, some of you might think, okay, that's pretty basic, that's common sense, but as I said last week, common sense doesn't seem to be as common as it used to be. And again, Paul said there was a reason for that, because people's mind have been clouded. He said in Ephesians 4, 17 and 18 that we looked at last week, they've refused for so long to deal with God that they've lost touch not only with God, but with reality itself. They can't think straight anymore. There's a whole lot of people out there that have lost touch. Because they've lost touch with God, they've lost touch with reality. And so they will say, what's true for you, not necessarily true for me. Their idea of truth has no basis in reality. And so we say, no, truth, by definition, is what corresponds with actual reality. Back to the example of my desk. The truth of the statement, there's a brown desk in my office, is not up for a vote. Doesn't matter if you believe it or not. Doesn't matter what five Supreme Court justices say. The only thing that the truth of that statement is dependent upon is if, in fact, there is a brown desk in my office. Truth is what corresponds with reality. Okay, are you still with me? All right. Three of you. I appreciate that. The rest of you, hang on just a second. I'll pick you up in a minute. We're going to swing back around. All right, we'll pick you up on the backside. Because of that, because truth is corresponds with reality, all truth claims are not equally valid. Okay? All truth claims are not equally valid. Think about it. I mean, saying that all cultures, all viewpoints, all ideas are equally valid, well, that's just dumb. All right? It's dumb. Think about it. I saw this as a title of a book, and I think I'm going to get it printed on a t-shirt, and maybe some of you will like it. It said this: be intolerant because some things are just stupid. I like that. What's the idea of that is not that we're supposed to be mean to people, but we should be intolerant of some ideas. Saying that all ideas are equal, saying that all viewpoints are the same and equally valid, that's not being tolerant, that's not being loving, that's taking a leave of absence from reality, because it's just not so. I mean, think about that. To say that all viewpoints are valid and all the same, if you take that point of view, how can you determine that Martin Luther King Jr. was right and Hitler was wrong? If all viewpoints are equal, you can't make that determination. And so it's ridiculous to say that all viewpoints are the same. And yet that's what our culture keeps force-feeding down our throats. It's what class after class after class is being taught to our students in school. That we can't judge people because this and that. All viewpoints are not the same. Be intolerant because some things, they're just stupid, all right? There are false truth claims out there. Would you agree with that? There are many, many truth claims out there. And so it is our job as a thinking person, as someone who is trying to live in accordance with reality, to make sure that truth claims actually line up with reality, to judge people or to judge things by their correspondence with reality. Of course, there's lots of truth claims out there. Some people will just lie to you. They will just look at you and lie to you. Most of them are in politics. Okay? They will just look at you and tell you what they know for sure is a lie. But other people will lie to you not on purpose. They're deceived themselves, and so they're telling you something that they believe is true, but it's still a lie. And so we need to be discerning. We need to make sure that what we are being told actually corresponds with reality, whether that's a politician or a preacher or your children or a teacher in class. Whatever it is, we have to make sure it actually corresponds with reality. We have to be discerners of the truth. And so, we're going to take a few minutes to play Ellisville Christian Church version of a game show that I would like to call Three Truths and a Lie. Johnny, hit the music, and contestants, come on down. Give him a hand, a round of applause. If we are supposed to be able to discern the truth, to figure out which is true and which is a lie, Tate, you come right over here. You can be red. Rich, you stand right over here. These are my friends, Rich and Tate Rocky. We're going to be playing the game show, Three Truths and a Lie. Now, I play this game a lot, like in groups, trying to get to know you, and the idea is that to tell three truths about, in the get to know you part of the game, it's to tell three truths about yourself and then one lie and see if people can figure out which one the lie is. Now, if I were to say, you know, I've been married for 26 years, I have two kids, and I'm the minister at Ellisville Church, and I once starred in a movie opposite Julia Roberts, Well, it would be obvious the wrong thing is that I've only been married for 24 years. That would be the difference there. So you can spot the lie that way. All right, well, this is not about me, but the idea in that is to tell things that people might not know about you, and so that it might not be obvious which is truth or lie. And so we're going to see how good that Rich and Tate are at spotting the truth when it might be hard to spot. And so we're going to have some multiple choice questions. They have placards. They're going to hold up the answer to what you think is the lie. See if you can spot the lie. Okay? Let's take a look at the screen here. Question number one. A sneeze can exceed the speed of 100 miles per hour. B. An average human drinks about 16,000 gallons of water in a lifetime. C. Men have one less rib than women because God took one from Adam to make Eve. D. Your left lung is smaller than your right lung to make room for your heart. Take a minute. Think about your answer. Don't look at your friend or your, all right? On the count of three, I need an answer here. On the count of three, raise up your answer. One, two, three. All right, and the answer is C. We have a winner. Okay, we have Rich is ahead by one. That is not true. Even though the Bible does say that God did take a rib from Adam's side to make a woman, he did not change the DNA structure of Adam, and therefore he passed along a full set of ribs to all of his children, right? But tricky. All right, next question. A. Preborn human babies acquire fingerprints at 3 months. B. Crocodiles replace their teeth every 2 years. C. The entire population of the world will fit into the state of Texas and each person would have 1,000 square feet of space. And D. The Great Wall of China is the only man-made structure visible from space. Take a second to figure out your answer. A, B, C, or D. Hold it up. Don't cheat and look at your father or son. And the answer is D is correct. That is the lie. An actual astronauts say that the Great Wall of China is not visible from space. What a popular myth. There are a few things that are. The pyramids of Egypt are, there's some greenhouses in southern Spain and a few other man-made objects, but not the Great Wall of China. If you're wondering about C, the population of the world is about 7.1 billion. The square footage of Texas is about, well, square miles is about 265,000 square miles, which is 7.4 trillion square feet. You do the math, it works out just over 1,000 square feet. All right, so we got 2-0, but Tate, you are in luck because this question is worth 3. All right, the final chance, there is still a chance. All right, question, here we go. A. Most of the fossils we find today were left in the aftermath of Noah's flood. B. According to a prophecy in the Old Testament book of Hezekiah, the world will end on December 21, 2021. C. Dinosaurs and humans once lived together. And D. There is a documented case of a 100-year-old man having a child with a 90-year-old woman. Take a moment, look at your cards. Is it A? Spot the lie. A, B, C, or D? I need your answers at the count of 3, 1, 2, 3. Answer is B. That's right. That one was false on a couple of different levels. There actually is no Old Testament book of Hezekiah. That was a tricker. All right. He was a king, but he didn't have a book. If you're wondering about C, we actually have photographic evidence of C. We can show that. There we go. Andy, thank these guys very much for their... We got some Reese cups for the winner, so there you go. You might or might not share with your son there. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Sometimes, of course, that last one, D, was the, if you're a Bible person, you know that the story of the 100-year-old man and the 90-year-old woman is the story of Abraham and Sarah. There's some neat stuff in the Bible. You ought to read it sometime. It's some cool stuff in there. That thing about the dinosaurs other than the Flintstones, the Bible actually does give evidence that that is the case. We'll talk about that in the next couple of weeks. But there's some cool stuff in there. You ought to read your Bible. Having said that, sometimes the truth is not easy to see. Sometimes the lie is not easy to see. And so as Christians, as people who want to be have our foundation built in the truth, we have to be discerning and to realize that truth is what corresponds with reality and that not all truth claims are the same. All right. The second thing about truth as we continue on here is that truth is exclusive. Truth is exclusive. All right? In other words, two opposing ideas can't both be true at the same time. Okay? If you don't know what that means, think about it this way. If 2 plus 2 equals 4, and it does, then 2 plus 2 cannot equal 5. Okay? They're competing truth claims. They both can't be true at the same time in the same way. And again, that sounds like common sense, but I'm continually amazed at how often people can look at two set of competing ideas and say that both of them are valid. Sometimes people hold competing ideas that are exclusive in their own mind and agree with both of them, and they hold these competing ideas in their brain. But the truth is exclusive. I'm reminded of the opening scene to one of my favorite movies, which unfortunately I can't recommend to you because of the language, but in the movie O Brother, Where Art Thou, there are, some of you have seen it, the three main characters are trying to decide who's going to be the boss, who's going to be the leader, who's going to decide the direction that their group is going to go. And so the first guy stands forward and says, well, I'm for yours truly. The second guy stands up and says, well, I'm for yours truly too. And the third guy looks at his friends and says, well, I'm with you fellers. But he can't, right? Because there, one says one and one says the other. You can't hold competing. Two things can't be true at the same time. Truth is exclusive. That's why, as we'll look at in the next couple of weeks, naturalism, that is the worldview that spawned the theory of molecules to man, evolution, and Christianity, cannot both be true at the same time because they are mutually exclusive truth claims. It's why Christianity and Islam can't both be true because they're mutually exclusive truth claims. Now, they could both be false, but they couldn't both be true because truth is exclusive and they both have exclusive truth claims. Okay, so if we can agree, and I'm taking a lot for granted here, if we can agree that everyone believes in some kind of truth, if we can agree that truth needs to be what's based in reality, that actually corresponds with reality, and if we can agree that truth is exclusive, that two opposite things can't be the same, or true at the same time, then actually we're ahead of about 90% of the population, and we should just go home and celebrate that. But we'll continue to look at the next three things so you can fill in your blanks. The next two kind of go together. Number three and number four go together, and that is that some truth can be discovered, but number four, some truth must be revealed. Some truth can be discovered, like the boiling point of water, or the fact that it hurts really bad if you hit your thumb with a hammer. Okay, that can be discovered, but some truth must be revealed. Now, that last statement, that some truth must be revealed, goes totally contrary to much of what our culture would say, much of the consensus view in the world that says you can discover everything there is to know through our five senses. Through science, we can determine everything. But again, there's two ways to look at everything. There are no objective observers. And God said this in Deuteronomy chapter 29:29, or this is said about God. The Lord, our God, has secrets known to no one. We're not accountable for them, but we and our children are accountable forever for all that He has revealed to us, so that we may obey all of the terms of His instructions. There's some things, according to the Bible, that we cannot know for sure unless God reveals them to us. God has more information than what we are able to ascertain on our own. Some truth can be discovered, but some truth must be revealed. We'll talk more about that in the coming weeks. Number five, and the last thing we'll kind of finish up here, the fifth truth about truth is that the truth will set you free. The truth will set you free. I believe as a culture, we bought into one of Satan's greatest lies of all, and that is that there's greater freedom in discarding God's truth than there is in embracing it. Right? Even though we all have some standard, the culture has told us, and we've bought in, that if we want to have a happy life, if we want to be fulfilled, if we want things to go well, we have to cast off God's standard and adopt our own. We want to be able to do what we want to do if we're going to have a good life. We have to make up our own rules. But it just isn't so. Some of you have lived that and know that it's not so. Jesus said it this way: if you hold on to my teaching, you really are my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will pin you in, hold you back, keep you from having fun. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. rather than handcuff us or restrain us or keeping us from living a full life, it's exactly the opposite. If we live our lives in congruence in, that goes along with the, in alignment with God's truth, then life will go better for us. We will have a better life. That's why Chuck Colson wrote a great book I encourage everyone to read, just called The Good Life, where he just explains how if you follow what God says, your life will be better. And it's undeniable that that's the case. If you follow what God says about finances, your finances will be better. If you follow what the Bible says about relationships, your relationships will be better. If you follow what God says about any topic, your life will be better. Why? Because it corresponds with reality. It actually works in the world because it's the truth. It's not true because it works. It works because it's true. And God says that His way actually works in the real world. Now, as we kind of sum everything up and kind of wrap this up in a bow this morning, some of you may be asking, why does any of this even matter? Why are we, does any of this philosophical mumbo jumbo about truth, does it even have any bearing on anything? Why have we spent so much time here this morning on this kind of abstract philosophical thing? Well, here's the reason, right? It all comes down to this. Christianity hangs in the balance of this topic and this discussion. You see, because Christianity is nothing but one big old exclusive truth claim. Christianity makes exclusive truth claim after exclusive truth claim, and it's either right or it's not. You see, if people, or if we, don't believe and understand that there is such a thing as truth, that there is such a thing as a moral standard that everybody has to live up to, then you can present, or I can present Christianity, and everybody will say, well, that's nice. That's nice for you. But C.S. Lewis put it this way. He said, one must keep on pointing out that Christianity is a statement, in other words, a truth claim, which, if false, is of no importance, and if true, of infinite importance. The one thing it cannot be is moderately important. Jesus said it this way. He said in John 14:6, I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Now, either Jesus was right or he was wrong. Either he was the only way to the Father or he isn't. Either Christianity is true or it's not. Eternity hangs in the balance. Everything that we do, every discussion that we'll have over the next several weeks hangs on the balance of that question. Is Jesus who he said he is or is he not? Now, I don't know if you've ever wondered about that question, that statement of Jesus. He said, I am the truth. He didn't say, I'm telling you the truth. I mean, he said that, sometimes he said that, but here he said, I am the truth. Not I'm telling you the truth or I can even teach you the truth. He said, I am the truth. How could he say that? That's kind of a weird statement. Right? But just to kind of put an end on this philosophical mumbo jumbo, if truth is what corresponds with reality, and if God, by any definition, is ultimate reality. If there is a God, he would be ultimate reality. If God is ultimate reality and truth is what aligns with ultimate reality and Jesus is God, then Jesus could say, I am in fact truth. It's why we looked at the verse in Colossians last week that said, all truth was wrapped up and hidden in the person of Jesus. It all comes down to Jesus. It doesn't come down to, do you believe that every single word in the Bible is true? Now, I happen to believe that, and the reason I believe it is because Jesus believed it, and I figured if a guy can predict his own death and resurrection and pull it off, then I'm with him. All right? But you don't have to believe that, right? You don't have to believe that to even go to heaven. It all comes down to, what are you going to do with Jesus? Not do you have the same opinions about me on every political issue or in every issue, or do you believe that? It's what do you believe about Jesus? Either he is the way and the truth of the life, or he isn't. It's an eternal question that everybody has to answer, and we want to make sure we get it right. This idea of truth couldn't be of more importance, especially for those of us who want to think about eternity and what Jesus is. The bottom line today, if you're filling out the notes, is that absolute truth is real and is knowable, and he has a name. His name is Jesus. So again, the question is not, do you believe every word that I've said, or do you believe every word that the Bible says? The question is, do you believe what Jesus said? What will you do with the person of Jesus? Is he the only way, or is he not? And that's something that we all have to decide.